Hey, this is Rob Unspach, and welcome back to another edition of eHeroes. For those keeping count, this is episode 393, and we're going to talk about creating happiness. And so I brought Chief Happiness Architect Chuck Salvo, who, by the way, was also a former Disney leader, and you know how much I love Disney, so I want to welcome Chuck. Thank you for being here, and this will be fun.
Thank you, Rob. I appreciate being here.
You know, it off air, we were talking about our Disney books, and you know, I have Marketing the Magic and Embracing the Magic's coming out very soon, or if you're, you know, listening to this later, it's probably already come out. So, you know, go out and buy them. But, you know, Chuck also has an awesome Disney book, or it's based on your experiences at Disney. And yes. So let's talk about that first, and then we'll get into the whole happiness stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, my book is Rave, Respect. It's really How to Respect and Value Everyone. And it's also a journey of life lessons from Disney and beyond. And really the focus of it was, as I worked in Disney, I was with Disney for 15 years, working in entertainment and also in the Disney Institute. And traveled the world helping organizations understand how to bring happiness. That was the biggest question, Rob, right? How do you make our customers happy? And I'd say, well, first you have to build the relationships between your employees and make them happy. Mm-hmm. And the leaders would say, no, we just want to make our customers happy. I said, no, it just doesn't work that way. And so I noticed that there's this really a major gap with COVID and with social unrest and the things that are happening in the world, and the telephone, of course, the handheld computer. And the fact of the matter is people don't know how to talk anymore. Mm-hmm. They know how to text. They know how to do, but even texting could be, kind of scary.
And I just read an article where Disney is now thinking about undoing some of the apps that are on the phone. So when guests come through the parks, they're feeling the full immersive experiences and not staring at their phones constantly.
I think that would be a great idea. Yeah, you see it now with the Disney app that they literally are walking through the park like this. And you're right, it hurts in that immersion and that intentionality to what Disney does. However, you know, it first starts foundationally, and that's what the book is about, with relationships. And I always like to say, let's save the world one relationship at a time. So the book really first helps people understand how to understand what their personality type is. It then teaches them how to identify other person's personality types. And then it talks about how do you engage individuals based on that in a conversation and getting to know each other. And then, you know, you understand whether, hey, sometimes we click and sometimes we don't. And that's okay, too. But we, you know, I don't know where it happened in the world that we can't disagree and still get along. Right? Because disagreement brings wonderful opportunity and great solutions.
Well, you know, social media gave everybody a voice, whether that was good or bad. But I think when you hide behind a keyboard, you don't feel like you need to be nice. And there are so many people that are vocal on, I think it goes beyond vocal, more like psychotic. And they throw their temperament in there. And I'm like, you know, why don't you just slow your roll? Because if you were in front of the person, you wouldn't act like that.
Yeah, I agree. I actually have a chapter on that, and about keyboard courage and about getting out of that herd groupthink, mm-hmm. right? Teaching people how to think for themselves, how to listen clearly to one another. Because you're right, that keyboard courage is such a curse nowadays. And you really need to learn critical thinking skills for yourself. But I did want to make, it sounds like it's very intellectual, the book, and very highbrow. No, I kept it really simple because I really wanted it to be short, easy to understand, but also very practical and applicable. Mm-hmm. And easy to follow. So the book is an easy read, not a heavy intellectual read either.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've tried to make all my books easy to read, non-intimidating, because if they go beyond a certain page count, And I try to keep them under 200 pages. If they go beyond that, then people don't want to sit down and read it in its entirety. You know, they'll say, oh, it's too much to read. They'll put it down and then they forget about it. So, you know, if you keep your books easy to read, non-intimidating, more people will sit down and read the whole thing. And
you're here.
It's 2 hours of their life, and then they can start implementing.
Yeah, well, this one's 80, but there's still great stories about Disney, great stories about other companies that have had this journey. And so I think they'll have fun, and I tried to have some humor in it also.
You know, you and Barry Jacobson, who's been on the podcast many times, and also co-wrote the foreword to the Marketing Magic.
I know Barry well.
The stories that you guys tell is just, it's captivating because, you know, here you're within the scope of Disney, but you also put your personality, your spin in it. And I think some of those stories become legacy because it's something that you pass down to other people. And you know, the stories that they listen to are going to be the catalyst to get people to either like Disney or don't like Disney. And I know that there's so many people out there, they'll say, as soon as I mention it, oh, I wrote another Disney book. Like, really? I don't like Disney. Why? You know, and then they'll go through all these things about wokeness. And maybe that's true. But my book has nothing to do with that. My book has to do with the marketing aspects that you're going to learn going through Disney. You know, so it's geared to every entrepreneur. And
yep.
Same with the stories that you tell. Same with Barry's stories. There is no, you know, wokeness. It's just a story. And people get so bent out of shape.
Well, you said something so important because I think that is really and hopefully, and I'm very hopeful with the new leader of Disney, Josh, that he understands the culture. At least he did. I think he still does based on what I've seen.
What I like about Josh is that he takes the time to walk the parks, just like Walt did. You know, and he meets people and he listens. And, you know, maybe that'll change because now he's CEO. Maybe he doesn't have as much time to do that. But, you know, I think he's different than Bob Iger, but he has more strengths. He's, you know, to me, he's more encouraging in the long term.
Yeah, I agree. It's Disney had a very simple model, and now I help organizations find their own model in that regard. But their simple model is a really clear set of boundaries, mm-hmm. and I think where Disney went off the rail a little bit, and where some of this concern came in, is that they got away from that simplicity. Disney, its brilliance was it being agnostic. They loved everybody. There was no everybody. And I mean, it doesn't matter age, sex, size, gender, you know, it didn't matter whatsoever. They loved everybody. Mm-hmm. And they made sure that they let people know that they loved everybody equally, individually. And when people started taking positions, this is where Disney really, and by the way, a lot of other corporations got into that model too. And you have to realize that it's okay to be agnostic as long as you respect everyone too. And so you can't, by not picking sides, you actually are putting a voice out there that's very simple that, hey, everybody's welcome.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what the brilliance with Disney was. Everybody's welcome.
Yeah.
And that's where the struggle came in a little bit.
Yeah.
I am hopeful also that they go back to the basics, mm-hmm. and focus on those basics, because that's where that magic, those magic moments came from. I mean, you mentioned like the stories.
Yeah.
The stories come from the fact that because everybody understands the clear set of boundaries, or did understand the clear set of boundaries that Disney used, is the fact that then it is inside that set of boundaries – everybody was empowered to create happiness, mm-hmm. right? And once they started blurring those boundaries, that's where trouble came in. They get back to the consistent set of boundaries. And if other organizations or entrepreneurs listening to this understand how to set that clear set of boundaries, that's where empowerment comes in. And that's where the magic moments come in. They're not scripted. They're right. Very genuine.
Yeah. You know, and I've noticed that when I go to Disney World, the moments that become magical are never scripted. You know, when you can take someone out of an element, you know, and I explained this off air, was when I took this group of entrepreneurs to Disney and we were at the Grand Floridian and I invited the photographer into our group to take pictures. He was blown away. He had never done that before. He had never been asked to be part of someone's group because he was always the photographer taking pictures of the group. And that was kind of a reversed magic moment. Yeah, it was great for us, but it became a happiness moment for him.
Oh, 100%.
You know? And so
yeah.
When you can take those moments and whether you're inviting someone into your group, whether you're experiencing Disney for the first time, you know, embrace that happiness because it's going to make those memories more magical.
Oh yeah, people don't remember the ride; they remember how they're treated,
and
it really is genuine.
What I noticed is that when I took the group on a VIP tour, we did the Wild Africa trek in Animal Kingdom.
Yeah,
so you go behind the scenes and you do the kind of the, I don't know, they latch you on and you're going over the bridge and you're Well, there was three guides, and every guide knew our names. You know, and we had our name tags on for a brief moment of time, but we took them off and they still knew who we were. They remembered us. They talked to us and they had conversations with us. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, this became not only real, but I felt like I connected with them. We became friends, even if just for a moment.
You know, it's genuine care, but it's not just one way. Right? You said it so well that you ended up inviting that person in. They were like, whoa. And that was a little bit, when you told me that story, I was kind of like a little bit sad because that's how it always used to be. It was, you actually built relationships back and forth. But when it becomes scripted, it becomes, oh, that's my job. But when it becomes cultural and genuine, now it's a purpose. It's a North Star.
You know,
and so creating happiness.
You know, the whole name tag thing on Disney employees or Disney cast members, you know, some of them just have their name. Most of them have their name and where they're from, which is great because, you know, I'm from Pennsylvania. I like to go there and look for other, you know, people from Pennsylvania. And so I strike up a conversation, you know, or, you know, sometimes you'll see, hey, could be military, could be Navy. You don't see too many of them. They usually just have their hometown. But, you know, when you can strike up conversations with these people, and a lot of cast members love that because they feel like they're part of your family, even if it's just for 2 minutes.
Well, they're empowered to do it. You know, the fact that they're, I tell this story in the book about letting some of family into, it's one of my perks. I'm retired. I still have that perk, thank goodness. And I can go into the parks for free. And but I was still working at Disney back then. And I was taking my family into the parks and they're, of course, parking. So I'm waiting in the heat. And this young greeter comes in contact with this group, it's a two older people and an older child with some mental challenges and with some medical challenges. And the person is bawling their eyes out. And the greeter's standing there and I'm listening to this. And the greeter's saying, no, you lost your magic band. You need to go buy another one. And I was like shocked. I mean, I was literally shocked. I was a young kid. And he goes, well, go over there to the ticket booth and they'll take care of it. They'll get you a new, you can buy a new ticket there. And they're just crestfallen. And the young man is just crying his eyes out. And I walked over to them, and now I'm in civilian clothes at that point, and said, "Hey, listen, I'm a fellow cast member." I said, "Do you know you could solve that?" And he goes, "What?" I said, "Yeah, I know you're probably new." I said, "But you could solve that. You can go over to them right now, and you could tell them you don't need to buy another magic band. We'll get you another magic band. Clearly, you have them, and we'll get you in immediately." Well, he goes, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, I promise you." And so, fingers crossed that his manager wouldn't yell at him, you know. So then he literally runs up to them, catches up to them before they get in line to the tickets. And I hear him talking, and all of a sudden, Rob, and I get emotional on this one because it's so emotional, but all of a sudden, they wrap their arms around him, and they had a big group hug, and everybody starts jumping up and down. And sure enough, he gets them to the window and walks them actually in front of the line and says, "Hey, this person lost their magic band. Can you get him a new one?" And what did the ticket person say? What do you think?
Sure.
Sure, no problem. Now, again, I'm hoping that's what will happen, and I'm confident that's what will happen. And then, and I'm also confident that when the leader finds out the story of what this greeter did, he will not only celebrate it, he'll recognize that person for doing something great, mm-hmm. as opposed to costing us money, right? Mm-hmm. And but who do you think that moment was the most enjoyable for?
Yeah, you know, it's, and I have a story like that. We were at breakfast at Art Animation the one year I took my grandson, and you know, we're looking for little small tiny packs of jelly to put on our English muffin. They don't have them, so they bring over a jar like this, right? And I said, "Okay, what do I owe you?" "Oh, nothing." I'm like, "Jar has a price on it." They just gave it to us, and it was like, okay, yeah, I could have paid for it, but you know, I wasn't going to use the whole jar. But you know, they're empowered to do small things. Sometimes they're empowered to do bigger things, but you know, I think it's that culture that they've been taught.
Well, it started.
But, you know, COVID did throw a monkey wrench into things, and I, you know, and I've been to Disney during COVID and after COVID, and before COVID, and I can tell you, not everybody was friendly during COVID because they didn't want to be there. They were scared, just like everyone else.
Right.
But you know, they opened the parks. And they believed everything was going to be safe, and it was. We didn't have a problem. But, you know, I think they did more to convince guests how safe it was, but less to convince their own staff, their cast members how safe it was. So there was a little bit of fear there. I think it's gotten
better. No doubt. No doubt. Yeah, I was there during that time, and it was – you know, like we had to be intentional to say, okay, we had to change our smile when you greet each and every guest to project a smile through your mask to each and every guest. So those are shifts that you have to do sometimes. And that was a very unique time.
Yeah.
But you're right.
The one of the guests that attended with me at in January, she had a cochlear implant. And she wasn't allowed to go through the security.
Oh,
so she always had to get wanded and padded down. And the one day I think we went through the security systems 7 or 8 times because I was going through resorts, I was going through this, I was, you know, and I thought, you know, I was kind of getting irritated because this process had to be repeated constantly. She was taking it like a trooper, you know, because she knew that the safety to Disney was paramount and they're doing their job. But, you know, I guess, you know, that they don't see a lot of the cochlear implants. So that, you know,
that individual didn't.
Right.
Yeah. And that's, we always say it's a purpose needs to overshadow task. Mm-hmm. Now, task is still very important in your role, but you also have to understand your purpose of we create happiness. So, and then yes, safety's in there, but you also have to kind of use your common sense, just like I talked to that greeter that, hey, this person clearly isn't trying to scam you, right? You know, so they really are. And that's the other thing when I do this with organizations, and Rob, I've done it with airlines, engineering, it works for every type of organization you could potentially think of. Mm-hmm. But when I tell them that, you know, the hardest part is to get their employees to understand that it is okay to be on purpose over task. Mm-hmm. And that's where the leadership struggles with that. Oh my gosh, you're going to give away the house. And in reality, it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. It's harder, even with Disney, it's harder to get the people to understand because they want to protect the business, the company they work for and get their paychecks from. Mm-hmm. So it's harder to get them to understand that it's okay to give that service, even if there's a little investment in it. Mm-hmm. But it also has to be, we use a term back then, I'm sure they still do, called kind versus kind. So if you drop an ice cream cone, you don't give a cruise, right? You give another ice cream cone, right? Mm-hmm. Lost a ticket, you give a ticket. You know, it's that simple. Teach them that, hey, I understand, but it's kind versus kind. And we rely on you to evaluate the situation. But fault on creating happiness.
Right. So, you know, you left Disney and what motivated you to start your own business?
Well, I was part of Disney Institute for 15 years, and I was also head of professional development and advisory side of business. And during a professional development, we would always have like small medical groups, dental groups, small entrepreneur businesses, startups. And they would always come to us after class and say, hey, can you teach me how to do that back at my organization? And we did have an advisory service, but it was like hundreds of thousands of dollars like to start, right? So they couldn't do that. So I was thinking, man, you know, my business model needs to be for that small startup, for that entrepreneur to be able to afford something like this. And so my business is scalable to different sizes of businesses. And then I took the leap. I had retirement, so I could take a good retirement package and still keep my benefits that I had, my perks from Disney. So, man, it wasn't that much risk there. And man, it ironically, my first businesses were a government organization that was 101 locations worldwide.
Wow.
And a top, probably the top fast food company in the world. So by initially my small, helping of small organizations were not my startup. And thank goodness from a startup's perspective from my business. But then as my business grew over the last 6 years, I've been able to help every level of business. So I've been very blessed, Rob, to help a lot of organizations find their happiness.
You know, and you know, let's touch on fast food. We don't have to name names, but you know, I just saw an article a while back where Wendy's is closing like 300 locations and Subway's are closing their locations. And you look at these restaurants and whether they grew too fast to, you know, whatever the reason was that they're starting to close is I don't know if it's overconfidence in their ability to sell or it's they can't get enough people to want to work. Where they're not paying them well. I think it's a combination of a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but when you see headlines where they're closing, you know, hundreds of locations, you got to think, okay, what happened? You know, and I know yes. what happened with Wendy's mm-hmm. is just the management was just, I can't say they were horrible, but they weren't taking in the considerations, not only of the employees, but also of the guest experience because, you know, I've gone into some of them and they're the dirtiest restaurants. And
right. Yeah.
And I just think that the care that you put into your building, especially when I come into and I'm looking for cleanliness. Okay.
Sure.
And if it's clean, I'm going to buy from you. If it's not clean and it looks like it, hasn't been taken care of for a while. I'm leaving. And I'm not saying that that's the difference between Disney and Universal, but I know Universal is getting a lot of great attention right now, but their older parks aren't the cleanest.
Right.
And I've been there. I've done it. You know, I've done the rides, and some of them are great, but they focus on Harry Potter and they focus on a few others, and the other ones get neglected and they're dirty.
Right. Right. And their motto was much more on the assets as opposed to the experience. Even though they have great experiences, I don't want to, they've done a much better job in that world too, but they still need to go back to the experience of the guests. Going back to the fast food question, you know, first of all, franchise models are difficult. Mm-hmm. And if the corporate entities are treating the owner operators in a very punitive way, that's one issue. Mm-hmm. What we were able to do with this model was give the owner operators a very easy set of guidelines or a set of boundaries, like we've talked about earlier, to follow. Mm-hmm. And so when we went, and so the first thing I do when I go into organizations is do a cultural assessment. I literally go and talk to every level of employee and leader, and listen to their voice and let them share. And it's all confidential. And boy, they share. They share everything. And then once we have that information, we're able to go back and we use a cross-functional approach where the same people we talk to, every level is now responsible for building the set of boundaries that they're going to use and follow. That allows it to be not some person coming in and telling them what Disney does or what they should do. It's letting them be an owner in building it. Mm-hmm. Now, this one came up. So when we did the cultural assessment, this one came up. And when I asked the corporate and when I asked the owners, what's the most important thing? Oh, safety and quality are the most important things. Oh, really? Does everybody think that? Yeah. When I talked to the cast members, the employees, they said, nope, it's fast. They want us to do everything fast. So over safety and quality, yep, they don't care about that.
Yeah.
So when we built the framework, with safety, obviously, in that business, it had become first. Quality came second, in order, by the way, safety, quality, friendly, then fast. What owners and entrepreneurs and everybody freaks out on is that they get upset that there's an order. Yet there has to be. There has to be an operational order for it to be logical for it to happen. Otherwise, you get what we heard from the employees that, oh, mm-hmm. fast is the most important. However, here's the crazy secret. When they realize that safety, quality, and friendly are paramount above that, they then understand that fast comes anyway. Mm-hmm. In fact, fast probably comes better than it ever did before. Because, like, let's use a burger, for instance. Well, in a burger joint, right, if you first aren't safe and it's undercooked, and that means the quality's poor, and you hand it to the person and they come back and have to hand it back to you because it's not done properly, so you're definitely not friendly, and your fastest then goes out the window. Well, the corporate people would say, oh, we don't count the redo orders. Well, what? Mm-hmm. Right? But when you do safety, quality, and friendly in order first, and everything is efficient, then it becomes fast,
mm-hmm.
naturally. Yeah. And I love it because then the corporation ended up going another route after a couple of years of this. But the owner-operators kept hiring us to put it in place. And corporate, to this day, comes back to me and says, why is the stores that you work with much more efficient? I said, because they're following the plan that you tried to put together, yet you just want to be punitive to the owners.
Yeah.
You want to give them a list of what to do, and they don't have a purpose or a north star.
If you ever walk into some of these fast food restaurants, they have displays up, and some of them will actually show the time from when you ordered, you know, and it counts.
Oh, all of them.
And you know, when you're constantly looking at time. Your orders are going to be messed up. Your orders are going to be wrong. But if you take the time to understand the customer, you're going to get you're going to reduce your errors. You know, and here's the thing is that, okay, so here's your average time. That's great. Now management wants you to be faster. And then you get a new faster time. Guess what? They want it faster. There's a point at which you can no longer go faster without screwing things up.
Yeah.
You know, and so slow down.
Biggest issue in all businesses, Rob, is that they don't attach the right metrics to the right people.
Right.
To your point, what are they trying to achieve? A quality product in a reasonably fast amount of time. Mm-hmm. But the second you put a clock on those people, that all goes out the window.
Yeah.
It's still okay to measure it. It's still okay to see how to prove it. But once you take the quality out of it, and once you take the safety out of it, then your whole situation blows up.
I took my granddaughter to a local fast food joint, and you could tell they were watching the clock. And you could hear the manager going, hurry, hurry, hurry. And somebody had a tray full of food, and they were bringing it to the guest. Yeah, and it didn't make it. All over the floor, all over the counter. I mean, so now you got wasted product. You got cleanup time. You got angry customer. Now they have to wait again. So, yeah. You know,
duh.
But, you know, we have a few minutes left. And I want you to share with the audience how they can find you. Where do they go?
Great. I mean, obviously, in this day and age, if you just look up Chuck Seville on LinkedIn or on the internet, you could find me. I look up Chief Happiness Architect Chuck Salvo. There's some other Chuck Salvos out there. I think there's a preacher, a comedian.
There's a preacher. I'm like, this isn't the right one.
Yeah, that's not me. But hey, nothing. I'm very good with that. But I'm the guy, and I'm the rave guy. I'm the respecting the value everyone guy. But the Chief Happiness Architect is a good way to find me. Also, the book is on Amazon, so you could look up Rave, How to Respect and Value Everybody, and find the book. I'd appreciate you taking a look at it and giving me your comments. Or if you just want to brainstorm, LinkedIn's a great way. I do a lot of insights and postings there and helping people along on this journey for happiness. So you could find me there also.
You know, and we connected on LinkedIn, and, you know, for everybody out there, you know, mostly entrepreneurs that are listening to this, you know, if you're not on LinkedIn, please get yourself an account. If you have an account, make sure you're active. You know, I find that I get more entrepreneurial skills, learning, advice, tips from people on LinkedIn than I ever did on Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know a lot of people are like, oh, well, all my friends are on Facebook. Okay, but are your friends clients? Are your friends other entrepreneurs? You know, go to LinkedIn. You're going to find, and I understand there's a lot of people out there. Rob, I'm already on 16 different socials. And look, I have thousands of connections on LinkedIn.
Yes.
I have a weekly newsletter called the Robism Weekly. And it's just my thoughts on and common sense on business. You know, and I find that I get a lot of people subscribing.
Yeah, that's why I sent you a note the other day. I loved what you wrote. I loved your insight. Mm-hmm. I felt we were aligned. And I said, hey, Rob, we're aligned.
Yeah, and if you don't ever buy my books, that's okay. But go out and buy Chuck's book. You know, learn how to be, you know, a raving, I can't say lunatic, because, you know, that doesn't fit. It might be me, but, you know, I want you to respect and value everyone. And it's hard today in today's day and age, and but you can still respect people even if you disagree with them.
One, absolutely. In fact, it's, you learn even more when you disagree sometimes.
Yeah. You know, and disagreeing is one thing, but having a a pissing match on social is not the way to do things. So step back, you know, evaluate and say, is this worth my time to argue with this person? You know, person that I respect. And just say, look, I respect you. I'm not going to get into an argument. Let's table this and come back with a fresh mind some other time.
Absolutely.
You know, we don't have to argue about politics. We don't have to argue about religion or how business, you know, is run. But we can respect each other and say, look, hey, that's a great idea. Never thought about that. Let me try it out.
Well, you know, a little quick tip before we go, Rob, is just like you, what you said. Don't start with the crazy things that you would never, what you were told as a kid never to talk about. Start with, you know, that we're both from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Start with what hobbies you liked when you grew up as a kid. What foods do you like? Mm-hmm. You know, what culture did you come from? You know, those are the things that really spark the initial conversations and allow you to get to know one another first. Maybe later on you can get into a little bit deeper stuff, but, you know, start with the light stuff first.
There you go. So everybody, please visit Chuck LinkedIn, go to his website, buy his book. Oh, your website is what? Salvo?
SalvoInnovativeSolutions.com.
There you go. And we'll see everybody on the next episode. Adios.